We're continuing the discussion we had yesterday about the Torah methodology for changing one's behavior. And that's something which has to be studied very carefully in general. And as I made the point yesterday, just hearing a shiur on the subject, a prescription for change and so on and so forth, in and of itself is good, but a shiur is not going to change you. It can give you the inspiration, and going to inspirational classes are very good. People walk away inspired. And it doesn't matter how inspired you are, it doesn't matter how determined you are, if you allow yourself to feel that that itself is going to produce the change, it will not happen. And it could be a life-threatening, a life-saving experience, that your life was in danger, you were in the worst possible danger, and you had a moment of clarity, and you prayed to Hashem, and it was clear to you what was important at that time, and there's no question, if God will only save you, this is what you will do. And you walk away and you're saved. If you are then saved, you have this tremendous feeling of gratitude and conviction that your life will be different. And that's what you will tell all your friends. And I don't even know if it's such a good idea to tell your friends. The more you're talking about it, the more it's dissipating. It is dissipating. You're not aware of it. And you're so convinced that you're a different person, and that feeling is dissipating. You're losing it. It's not, and it will not take very long until, at that moment, you may feel all of these stupid things that I care about when I went shopping. This little thing, it didn't match. I got upset about the most ridiculous things. How can I get upset over stupidities? The way this thing was set up, or the furniture, it had a little dent in it, or whatever. How could a person ever be concerned about things like that? And you're a different person. And you'll, but a few days go by, and a week later, you'll start to notice something again on your, you're wearing this thing, it just doesn't look right, and it bothers you, why didn't they? And then you may shake, well, heck, I can't believe that this thing, okay, the next week, you won't be amazed at how you could possibly think that these things are important. That feeling will go away, and you'll be back to where you are. That's the nature of people, that's the reality, and you will forget. That's not just the Sar HaMashkim. It's not that he was an evil individual. He's a person. He's an ordinary human being. And he functions in a certain way. At the moment, I'm sure he was... We don't know what he answered Yosef.
What does it mean?
That the butler did not remember Joseph. A. And he forgot him. But at the moment that he asked for the favor, I'm sure that he... In his own mind, he guaranteed that he would do it. The Torah doesn't record his reaction, but if he wasn't going to do it, the Torah would have recorded it. And then it wouldn't be a surprise. There wouldn't be a surprise that he didn't remember him if he never said he would remember him. We must assume that he said that he would. Otherwise, he didn't forget. Because we're all the Sahama. That's the way we are. Don't think you're any different. That is the ordinary individual who's operating in a certain way and believes that his emotions... If his emotions are good, he will do the good thing. If that's the case, how much more so if a person goes to a shiur and is very inspired, which is a very good thing. But the mistake is to believe that in and of itself, that feeling of inspiration has changed me. I'm a different person now. And you'll tell your friend, I heard this shiur tonight, I'm a different person. That's a mistake. You're not a different person. You're the same person who's been momentarily inspired. It would be like akin to any experience. You had a great experience, but that's going to wear off and you're going to be the same. You must understand that you're not changed. You're the same person. You have a possibility of making a change. And if you implement, if you allow it as it is, it's not going to work. You could see that in a physical way if you've been inspired to a new understanding of health, the benefits of nutrition, and so on. You heard a class and it inspired you, but you realize that if you don't implement it, it's not going to do you any good. Same is true over here. So even our talking about the subject is important, but it's only going to be important if you implement it. And you can't wait until you got the perfect use. You start doing it. You start working on yourself. It's not a perfect science. You have to start implementing it. I thought about it afterwards yesterday, because there is another danger too in the all or nothing approach. The fact that when a person does go about making changes, then there's another emotion, the desire to be perfect. It's a strange kind of a phenomenon. instead of being realistic. Now, I think that's the sense of Ukasha ani la'atmi me'oni. A person has to be very realistic as to how much time and energy you can put into this kind of thing. Also, be realistic about your goal, that you may have a certain sense of perfection, which is based upon looking at others or whatever, role models. Role models are good, but they also contain a danger in role models. A person can't just copy somebody else and try to mold their own behavior like that person. The idea, of course, the person is an ideal, but you have to implement that ideal in terms of your own nature. So that's a difficulty when you read about these books about great tzaddikim and so forth. I mean, they present it in a way which is really, on the one hand, it's sort of inspiring, on the other hand, it's ego deflating, because if you're realistic, you know that you can't be like them. You can only be yourself. That's the so you shouldn't be depressed. That can't be the factor. I think that's what it says. Ukeshani la'atzmi me'oni. That statement in Pirkei Avos is what we're talking about. Im ein ani li mi li, if I'm not for myself, who is for me? That's what that means, to say that a person is obligated to be for himself, which means to say that you must take charge of your own nature and bring it to perfection. To perfection, of course, is relative to your makeup. And that's a great tzaddik. That's what the Rambam says, that each person can be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's, but are we going to be on that level of nevuah? That's an absurdity. The Rambam says, for example, in the Shmona Prakim, that at the outset, I'm quoting now, at the outset, a person's nature is neither virtuous or faulty. That's the yesod of Judaism, contrary to the prevailing philosophy, again, in religious circles, when they write about these tzaddikim as though they were saints, as though from earliest youth they were naturally only righteous, that good by nature. That's what they're trying to show. That is a Christian idea. That's not a Jewish idea. It's contrary to the idea of free will. It's a denial of human nature. A person is neither virtuous, there's no such thing as a natural tzaddik, there's no such thing as a natural Russia. A person is a result of the choices that he makes. That's the idea of Bechira. And that's where a person is obligated to engage. That's the task of man, is to perfect his nature. Put it in a different way, the canvas, so to speak, I'm using an analogy of an artist, the canvas of the Jew is his soul, and he's obligated to work on it. To work on it and to bring it to perfection. The second part is ukeshani la'atzmi, and when I am for myself, which means to say that I'm working on myself, me'oni means that a person has to recognize that he has a certain nature and he's limited. The amount of perfection he can attain, or the amount of the good that he's searching, is limited. That's it. It has to be realistic. And that's his own nature. He has to get to know himself. Very few people know themselves. Know your nature and be realistic and be honest. That's what you are. When a person gets a truer sense of what he is, then he's not going to be upset that the other person appears to be better, or whatever it is, that person is less egotistical than I am, or that person is better in this area than I am. Because since you know yourself, the only reason you're upset about others being better than you is because you don't really know yourself, and you're judging, you're assuming that you could be like them, that you ought to be like them. That idea that I ought to be like them is completely false, because it's an impossibility. It denies the principle. Each person is a unique endowment, is a unique entity. There's no really, in that sense, I would agree with the comment, there's no two people that are identical. That's the idea of the value of the individual. That Chazal talk about that each person should say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, that the world was created Bishvili. Which sounds ridiculous for me. It sounds like a narcissistic thing, but it's not. It means that the world exists in our sphere. In this sphere, everything, man is the pinnacle of the creation, and everything was created essentially in the lower spheres for the sake of man's needs. So Bishvili means that for Tzelem Elokim, for a being with the divine soul, and there's the unique nature. Each person has a particular. The general seal, so to speak, is the same. It's Tzelem Elokim, but it manifests itself with certain particularities. That's the will of God. So therefore, you have to be yourself. And that's, I think, what it means, ukishani la'atzmi, and when I ask myself, me'oni, what am I, means you shouldn't have an unrealistic sense. You have to, and that's the good. If you've achieved your state of perfection, given what you are, that's what the Gemara says with regard to Talmud Torah. Some can learn more, some can learn less. Ubilvad, with the, that is to say that it makes no difference. Some learn more, some learn less, as long as you, your heart is dedicated to your Father in heaven. That's to say, you have to recognize that's your capacity. When a person recognizes that's his capacity, then he will be content with it, unless he has a big problem. He will be very content and he'll be very, very happy. He'll have no desire to be like anybody else. And he'll be very happy that there are other people that are smarter than him, and that he'll respect them, and he'll be very happy because he enjoys what he has. He enjoys his chelek. A person has to be sameach b'chelko, to rejoice in his share. Now, when you tell it to people, that's because they don't know what their share is. If you don't know what your share is, you're looking, it should be like his. How come he's got? When you realize that is an utter impossibility, and that I'm not going to give you a pat on the back and say, well, you have your things, and you're true or not true, it's irrelevant. That's not going to really help. What is, you are a creation of Hashem. Hashem created you. And you are the way you are because of the will of Hashem. Now, within the way, you're neither virtuous nor wicked. You're a particular entity with abilities, with talents, with challenges, whatever you want to call it. We all have them. And your task is to use that. That's the canvas. That's your essence. See, for the Jew, we're not interested in art like other people are. The externals, the perfection of the externals. The externals are okay, but the externals are a means to an end. The new student, she was asking me about art and music, you know, how do we look at it and all that. He's excited about these things, creativity. I said, it all depends upon what it's utilized for. We don't worship art for the sake of art just because it's great art. It depends on the message. A person could be a genius in creativity, but could be using it for pornography or something debilitating or debasing. If it's used for good purposes, for good ideas or whatever, to inspire people, it's good. If you get a benefit from it. If not, it can be used for negative. In and of itself, it's a means to an end. We're not like in this society, worship art. Great art. It's great. What if, I don't know, you look at it, I can't see it. I can't see that it's worth millions of dollars. I don't see what's there that's worth millions of dollars. I think the whole thing is ridiculous and it's an exaggeration. It's worship of a man. It's basically a hedonistic worship of man's talent. There's a lot of talent there. But that talent doesn't carry that kind of worth. Because any doctor or brain surgeon has as much of a talent which saves lives, but he doesn't, while he may get rewarded well, there's no comparison. He's not the one that people look up to in society. So, but music, whatever, even great music, what's called great music, okay. How important is it in the whole scheme of things? That's exaggerated tremendously. That's this society. That's not the view of Torah. At best, good music has a purpose. The Rambam says when a person is feeling down and depressed, he should look at pleasant things that lift his spirits. He should listen to pleasant music that lifts his spirits. There's nothing wrong with it. But what's the purpose? What's the good? So that his spirits are improved and he can now function. He can learn Torah. He can serve Hashem. It's a means to an end. For us, the essential is the neshama, the soul, the divine soul. That is your most prized possession. And I don't even think that people look at it that way. They negate it as though there is no neshama. As though you can engage in these activities and they have no effect. It's kind of like people who smoke and they deny that it's having an effect on their lungs. They're living in denial. And then eventually they'll go to the doctor and they'll show them the x-ray and then they get shocked. In a much more significant way, people live their lives and do all kinds of activities as though there were no soul. It's kind of like smoking. There's build-up. You see? They're not concerned about the state of their soul. And to the contrary, that is the essential, that's the only thing that's you, that is the essence of you. It is ironic that people are much more concerned about their possessions. The further removed the thing is from importance, the more energy people put into it. You see how much energy people put into their houses, for example. keeping their furniture. Most people. Now, the further removed the thing is from a person, the more the person is dedicated to it and attached to it. Money, people go crazy about money, and yet, after a certain point, it's meaningless. They don't really get anything out of it, and they don't even spend it. They leave it over to somebody else. And the closer a thing is to home, the less significant. Like a person's health. They don't take the same care of their health as they take of their possessions. That's physical health. And ultimately, though there are people who are concerned about their health. Health fanatics. But they don't show the same type of concern about the health of their soul, which is the ultimate health. So that's something which is important. Okay. It's really, therefore, important, getting back to what I said yesterday, that a person has to get to know themselves, get to know your own nature, your own makeup, in a realistic kind of a way, and work on yourself. But you've got to do so, even there it's dangerous when you try to work on yourself and improve yourself. If you're aiming for an unreachable goal, then you're not going to be happy either. You have to be realistic. And very often we're not. When you get into Torah, you know, guys have this thing, they want to be another gadol, or they want to be a genius, they're striving, but that can also make you miserable if what you're striving for is not attainable. And because they want to be like someone that they saw. They want to be like Rabbi Soloveitchik, or they want to be like this rabbi or the other rabbi. And that's going to lead to a lot of depression, ultimately. You then will not achieve what you actually are. You won't enjoy that, what you actually are. And you're not going to achieve what you're fantasizing about, because it's just not real. So I happen to think that that's the idea of Samech B'Chelko. That when a person is convinced, the problem is not to be rejoice in your portion. The problem is that you don't want to see that as your portion. Once you accept that as your portion, you see, there has to be a certain amount of acceptance of oneself here. Now that could be, I don't mean to forgive you, there's some people that are, well, that's me, I'm weak, I can't, that's a cop-out. I mean in a realistic way. That a person really works on themselves and tries and tries and tries, and after a certain amount of time, you sort of becomes clearer to you that this is me and this is what I can do, and I, within that range, and that I can learn 4 hours a day, I can learn 6 hours, I can learn 2 hours, whatever the case may be, that's you. You can't hold up this goal. That's very, in the yeshivas they do that, it becomes a big problem too, that there's a certain goal, learning full time, learning so many hours a day, and people try, a lot of yeshiva students are ruined with it, completely ruined, because they're trying to, that gets them going, there's a big superego to be that way, and they're striving to do that, but it's not real, and after a while they just burn out, they can't do it, then they feel totally depressed, and they leave learning. Because learning is now associated with a big defeat. That is the wrong way to go. It's got to be realistic, and it's the long range. It's a long range thing. It's really a task for life. In life, you need time. Time goes by. Certain passions begin to diminish. You begin to be able to accept certain things. You don't feel as jealous anymore. So on and so forth. Because you begin to appreciate the good itself. When you begin to appreciate the good itself, you enjoy the good. You enjoy the fact, the appreciation of an idea, or you appreciate the good deed that you did, or you appreciate the fact that you acted in accordance with justice. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether people notice it or don't notice it. You're focusing more and more on the happiness that comes from the thing itself. Because of the awareness of Hashem, that you find favor in the eyes of Hashem. It's a certain closeness to Hashem. That's a very important factor. Now that goes to the question about human approval that was raised. Well, what's so bad about the desire for approval? I mentioned that yesterday as a specific. That when you become aware of the fact that you have an inordinate need, you want to work on that. Now I didn't say that there's anything wrong with approval. Approval has its place. because we all need approval, and it's a good thing. Obviously, when you're raising children, how are you going to, one of the tools, you don't want to have to bang them on the head every time they do the wrong thing. So the approval is a good one. I mean, there are times when you have to show a little anger and may even have to give them a little potch. Not approval is necessary when the person is doing the correct thing, so then they get approval. That's a reward. And it should be used appropriately. But ultimately, we don't maintain that that's the... That can become a huge problem. As you get, you know, if your need for approval, based upon the fact of a certain type of an insecurity, it's always connected. There are certain keys over here we spoke about. The insecurity factor is huge. And because a person is insecure, so they need a lot of approval, that is not a good thing. Because you're not pursuing perfection. You're only doing things not because they're right, not because they're good, but because how it's going to appear. And you become enslaved to appearances, to creating a certain appearance. And then it's not the good itself for its own sake. Slowly but surely, you should train yourself. Now, I'm not saying that you should reach the point where you don't need any approval whatsoever. I don't know that. We're talking about moderation. We're human. We're human and we have emotions, and it's a good thing to... Approval plays a role. First of all, it should be based upon realistically. If you did something and it was approved, you want to know why. Let's say it was approved for the wrong reason. Let's say you got approval, you gave a class, which can happen. It can happen, and they liked it. Oh, you feel good, they liked it. Well, but then you find out why, because they thought that you were saying... It turns out that that's not what you really meant. You see, so what do you do then? I mean, if the approval is the essence of what you're seeking, that is going to prevent the person from achieving the real perfection. It should be a secondary kind of a thing. It's nice. It's kind of like honor. What's wrong with excessive pursuit of honor? If a person sees that they have an excessive need for honor and recognition, so recognition is not the good. That is to say that the only thing that's important is how you're perceived by others, not the pursuit of the objective good. So then, but then you have to acknowledge. People are ashamed to admit it, because that's a bad one. We're ashamed to admit that we have ego and we have needs and we need honor. We need recognition for what we do. Now, in and of itself, it's not bad if it's within reason, because it does serve as a motivation. It's pleasant. It's sort of like a person gets an honor. Now, we maintain that honor is one of the most corrupting things. That's the ego. But it doesn't... If a person has the correct attitude, he's not searching for it, he's not basing everything he does on it, because then you're saying that that is the ultimate good. What's the ultimate good? Recognition. So you're building... First of all, again, another thing with regard to approval... See, the need for approval also is very much connected to a person's relationship to God, because then you are projecting unwarranted powers onto people. You're saying that that's the most important thing, that my fate is really not dependent upon my relationship with God, but upon what people think of me. And that if I get people to like me and to approve me, I'll have a certain security in life. It's really the worship of people and the worship of society. It is rooted ultimately, if they're taken to an extreme, in false ideals. A person should remove himself from that. And it should be within reason. It should be a secondary thing. This person should run away from honor. That's what Pirkei Avos says. Whoever runs away from honor pursues him. That's an interesting observation. That the desire for honor is really contradictory, because it is contradictory in the sense that if a person pursues honor runs away from him. True honor runs away from him. Because it's just built into the structure. People sense that you're running after it. When people sense that you're running after it, that you need it, that you're dependent, then they lose respect to you. So if you think about it, it's a self-defeating kind of an approach. But that the person who loves honor is caught in a conflict. If he runs away from it, he doesn't see it. He has to go after it. But when he goes after it, he knows that he's got this problem, because he's not going to get it, because people are going to say... See, they try to appear smooth. The politicians try to... So then you have to be a complete phony and act as though you don't care. You have to put yourself in a position where you're going to be recognized, but you have to make it appear as though you're not looking to be recognized. And therefore, a person should work on that aspect of their life and review. Review the different areas in which it manifests itself. And be clear as to try and look within yourself. Learn from that. Why do I need it? Oh, I felt into, why did I feel insecure about it? To try and trace it to its particular origin. What is the insecurity over here? Work on it. Then, do not give in to that urge. If you're insecure about something, think it through. Let's say you're presenting an idea, and you're insecure about it. So then work on the idea. Get the idea clear. And then you don't need the approval of the audience. Withdraw. Don't indulge that emotion. Then your soul will learn that you don't really need it. See, the biggest mistake you're making is the belief that you really need these things. That's what I was thinking also after yesterday's discussion. Why, if you really free yourself from Lashon Hara, you really train the soul that not to engage in it, and that it's not... The real problem is because a person does believe he's getting a benefit from it, ultimately. He really feels he's getting a benefit because it feels good and it makes him feel better about himself. When a person trains himself to see that he gets that it has nothing to do with him, that he doesn't get any benefit from it, that what happened to the other person, no matter how embarrassing it is to the other person, does not in any way do any good for him. At first he treats it, wow, he's happy about it, as though it really did a good for him. When he realizes after time and time again that it has nothing to do with him, then he's going to lose interest in it. Because he's not really interested in what's going on in the other person's life. I don't want to hear about what he's doing in his business. I have no interest. The only reason he listened to the Lashon Hara was because he was waiting for that part which would make him feel good. In the false belief that it really is a good. That it really is a good. That there's reality to that. That's connected to the idea of approval. The idea of approval is based upon the fact that the other person's approval of you has reality. There's reality that I really gain from it. There is no reality, maybe a practical reality if he's your boss, but in terms of the goodness of your soul, in terms of where you are, think about that. Think about that. When you get an approval and you feel great, it's because you really believe that there's something good about you. You give it reality. That person's approval has a certain reality. And now things have changed. But the truth of the matter, it isn't. It isn't. You're the same person and nothing has changed. You are giving it reality. Once you learn, you've trained your soul that there's no reality to it, you're not going to want it anymore. It's useless. It's like when you thought, when you were collecting certain things, because you thought they were useful, you know, like coins, and you thought they had value. You think they have a certain value. When you finally discover that there's no value, you don't want them anymore. If you pursue this approach and you do it and repeat it constantly, you'll reach the point where it won't be that significant to you. You may like it, it'd be nice. I mean, sometimes you get some approval. It will not have the same psychological impact because you've removed the false association. You had a false association. You really thought that to get approval is unbelievable. It goes back to childhood, because in childhood it was the parent, and then in that world, in that reality, the approval of the parent was everything. It had reality then on a certain level. It has no reality now. It doesn't make any difference. The most approved people or popular people can be the most miserable. It doesn't make any difference. It's an addiction. That's what you have to. You have to teach that to your soul. I'm just telling you, looking at it intellectually, the task is to educate your soul, to educate your emotions until the emotions have absorbed the idea. They will. If you continuously do it and you have a discipline about it, you'll withdraw. It's like an addiction. The addiction will get weaker and weaker and weaker, and you will see situations where you could get the approval and you withdraw from getting it. And you'll feel bad. Why didn't I go for it? And then it'll wear off and you're... more withdrawn from that. And then that energy will be shifted into the appreciation of doing the right thing in and of itself. That's part of your relationship with God. As a person develops, you have to work with a person, we're talking about working with kids now, you have to work with a kid in accordance with the level of the child. This is a slow process. There's development going on. And you don't see all the evidence of it, but it's different things are working out. The child is going to school and learning from the teacher, assume they have a good teacher, about what's the right thing to do, and you should care about others and you shouldn't be selfish. But that they hear that, if it's presented decently. At the same time, they're very selfish beings, and they don't really care that much about others unless they can get... That's the emotional. There's two people that, you know, the emotions are working, and so you have to know what to expect from the child at that point. They will do, teenagers will do actions that are nice, they'll do chesed projects, etc. But they have powerful emotions. Now, if the child is concerned about something, they're having a party, whatever it is, or they're concerned about anything, which has to do with they don't want to look ridiculous and the other and make a fool out of themselves, then, well, what do you can't philosophically tell a teenager at that point that you shouldn't really care. It's just not going to work. He's not ready to absorb that on an emotional level. He may hear the point, but that's true in the abstract. It's not true when I go to the event. So then you work with it. You work with it. You can gently say, well, you know, we tend to... You can gently say that, but you got to help the person through. How do you get through this situation? That's the way you should go. Now, in that case, when she was concerned about appearing babyish, you can't negate the validity of the emotion. That's not going to help a person develop. And by the way, and that's going to... That very derech of negating the validity is contrary to what I'm saying, because the time is going to come when you're going to have to be honest about your emotion, but she's been trained not to be honest about the emotion. I shouldn't even have this emotion. So I have a lot of people out there that have heard philosophy and why these things are ridiculous, and it's just ego, it's just this. They take... The next step is that, oh, I shouldn't have these things at all. And therefore they're ashamed to admit that they are jealous. So they repress it. And that's not the derech. You must be, if you want to improve yourself, you have to be honest about yourself. Make those mental notes. On page 23, one of the prayers that we say after the Birkas Hashaka. A person should always be fearing Hashem, Baseser, when he's alone, in private, as well as in public. Well, at first glance, it would seem that the Kiddush, it's much easier to be that way in public. In public, there's the impetus. You have your reputation to be concerned about. But what about in private, when no one's watching? Umode al ha'emes. And honesty. The person should acknowledge the truth. V'dover emes bilvavo. And he should speak the truth in his heart. Then v'yashkem v'yomesh get early sick. So what's the difference between the two? Mode ala MS is in a situation where you're having a discussion with somebody else. There are two different situations in which you have to be MS. One is in confrontation with somebody else. So that's two different phenomena. There are certain people, for example, certain people have the ability to be honest within, but they can't acknowledge it. There's a certain emotion to acknowledge the truth, because then it becomes an ego battle and you have to win. Very often you'll be in a situation like that, where the other person has a valid point, but you're afraid that it'll make you look bad. You don't want to lose the argument. So, and you know how to maneuver better than the other person. That's a good lawyer. So you come back with a very good retort. But that's falsification. You're not being modal emes, because you know what the truth is. Then there's another situation where it's bilvava, in your own... It's nobody knows, nobody saw. You're the only one, and you can, you don't have to acknowledge it. But that's the perfected individual acknowledges the truth inwardly, what it really is. That's what I'm talking about over here. To be cognizant of what you did. And it could appear one way. It could appear to the audience as one thing, but they don't see what's within, and you're a good actor, and you've convinced them that it's humble, you've convinced them or it was just a nice joke. But you know, if you know that inwardly it partook of something else, that it was really aggression, so you don't have to, I'm not saying you have to acknowledge it publicly, but at least acknowledge it to yourself. Acknowledge it to yourself, be honest with yourself. That's a bit, and don't fool yourself. The second part is saying don't fool yourself about yourself. That's how you harm yourself. Honesty is the key in this entire thing. And even if you're doing it, a lot of times you're indulging it. It's funny, you'll reach the point where you're indulging it. I need to do this. But you're at least cognizant of it. I'm aware of it. If you indulge it and you deny it, then it's it. You're just along that path. You're not in tune with yourself. You're dishonest. Sometimes you're saying, I have to do this. I need that pat on the back. I need that compliment. I know what it is. I know it's a weakness. I know. But at least you say, well, that's it. I just indulge that emotion and you move on. And then you can analyze it. You don't have to feel guilty about it either. You don't have to feel guilty about it because that's part of this of life, that there are times when you need certain things. You need an emotional support. There's nothing wrong with that. But what would be wrong with it is if it's taking you away from an awareness of your nature. As long as you're aware of your nature, so then you can head in the right direction. I'm not telling you to be ascetic now. I'm not telling you to be like rigid. You can't stop living. You can't stop. But if you have this method, slowly but surely, slowly you'll be guiding yourself in the right direction. Less of that. Less of the indulgence. More of the appreciation of what's, you know, of being humble. And training yourself that when you were humble, you weren't starved. You didn't lose out. Everything's fine. As opposed to why? What do you think is going to happen if I don't get that honor? Why do I feel bad about that? You work it through. Getting to know your chelik also is not an exact science. It takes time. Honesty. If it's honest and you've tried and you have other, you know, slowly but surely. Sometimes as you're working in a certain direction, you don't really know yourself either. It's interesting. You don't really know yourself. Because when you first start out, you don't know what your capacity is. And then if you get more involved, let's take learning, you get more involved in learning, you can make breakthroughs. And sometimes you make breakthroughs and you get more involved and you enjoy it when you do more of it, so you can increase. At other times, it's also possible that you realize with another thing that this is it. I need a certain amount of this emotional enjoyment, even if you want to cut back on it. There are certain people that have a greater desire for things, for clothing, the enjoyment of clothing, the enjoyment of fine things. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, we can, you know, apply it to any area. Some people don't really care. Clothing is not important. Is not important to them. But some people care, and clothing is important to them, and they want to look a certain way. There's nothing wrong with that. Provided it's, what's wrong is if that becomes like a fashion, becomes everything, that's your values, that's your world, so then it's frivolousness. But if you're living an intelligent life and you need certain enjoyments and you get enjoyment out of it and you make sure that it's not corrupting your philosophy, so then you'll slowly but surely, I think it will become less and less significant, but then you'll realize that's it, this is important to me and I have that emotional need. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with the emotions. We're not saying that get rid of the emotions. We're not saying that. You should focus on being in pursuit of that which is significant in life. And you have to satisfy your needs. Just like you have to satisfy your need for eating. You need friendship. There's a lot of needs. I can't go, I mean, I'm just giving the general. But none of these things are wrong. I started off by saying that none of these things should be looked at as wrong. You can't use the model of other people. You've got to use the model of yourself. Now, that's going to take a while because you don't really know yourself at this point. So you're learning more about yourself. And as you, sometimes a person experiments with himself. I know someone who is a high-level individual, big Talmud Chacham, and so on and so forth. Had a certain enjoyment, let's put it this way, a certain enjoyment, which was okay. A certain enjoyment, which was not... But it would have been healthier not to partake of it at all, but whatever the case is. I remember the person discussing that he was going to try and cut back and see the effect, and see the effect it had on him. How it affected him psychologically, and if he was able to and withdraw the... that it didn't affect his learning because he had an enjoyment. When a person has a certain enjoyment. See, that's why it's bad to deprive yourself of enjoyment. And that's why the Ram refers to people who refrain and practice asceticism as sinners. Because you've got to be very careful about these things. For a person to refrain from eating good foods out of a mistaken notion that God, the Rambam talks about that. When fools, he uses very strong terminology. Nevertheless, when the fool saw the pious perform the above activities. In other words, you copy certain people. You can't just copy what this individual, this tzaddik, is doing. He may be doing it, going to an extreme, because he has to cure himself from a certain issue, whatever the thing is. You can't just copy somebody else. It says, it's like taking somebody else's medicine. So he says, but when the fools, let me just read the entire thing, okay? At times, some of the pious have deviated towards an extreme. The pious means the righteous people who are living correctly. At certain times, by fasting. Okay, now, fasting is not the norm, but on certain occasions, certain times, it should be the correct thing to do. By fasting, giving up sleep at night, refraining from eating meat or drinking wine, shunning women, wearing coarse wool and sackcloth, living on mountains, or seeking solitude in the desert. Okay, so in other words, when you see the pious people, now most of the untrained people, you see, that's a righteous person. He's giving up. That's a very powerful emotion. These deeds were performed to correct their conduct, as explained above, or because of the degenerate nature of the people in their city, i.e. they saw that dealing with them and seeing their deeds impaired their own conduct. In other words, people that would separate themselves and go off into solitude. You don't know the reason why they did it. You see, they may have done it because of a specific reason, to correct a certain defect. And they feared that their character traits would also be corrupted through a relationship with them. Therefore, they departed from these societies to dwell in the deserts where there are no wicked people. As the prophet says, quote, would that I be granted a lodging place in the desert. So the, see, you got these set up over here. In other words, at times, tzaddikim were observed to do things that would be an extreme of giving up certain pleasures, of not socializing, so on and so forth. But they were doing it because of reasons known to them, not to establish a general principle. So the Rambam says, nevertheless, when the fools saw the pious perform the above activities, they did not comprehend their intent and thought that the activities were good in their own right. So people were attracted, religious people, superego, were attracted to those, that's the ideal. The ideal is to just stay up all night. The ideal is to fast. That's the way we should go. They began to emulate the behavior of the pious, thinking that through this they would become like them, attaining inner refinement. With this intent, they began afflicting their bodies through many different types of penance, thinking that they had reached peaks of divine service, and that this brings them close to God, as if God were the enemy of the body and desired to destroy and crush it. They do not realize that these deeds are bad, and that they will lead a person to undesirable character traits. To use an analogy, they are like people who are untrained in medicine, who see an experienced physician administer potions of certain medicines, etc., to patients who are dangerously ill, and prevent them from eating ordinary food. Through these herbs, these patients were healed and saved from great danger. These fools, however, jumped to the conclusion that if these foods could heal the ill, they could surely maintain and enhance the well-being of the healthy. Therefore, they began to use them at all times and to follow the diet of the ill. Such a person will surely become ill. Similarly, such people will become spiritually ill from using remedies while they are healthy. Not to have this attitude that there's anything wrong with having a certain emotional need, and to satisfy it in moderation. That's very, very important. There's nothing to be ashamed about. And if a person is living an intelligent life, living a correct life, and you have a certain emotional need, and our emotions are different. Of course, assuming that that thing is not something which is prohibited by the Torah. So, some people like furniture. Some people like a finer house. So some people don't care at all about that, but they have other things. Everybody has things that they like that are important to them. The main thing is that you're in control of it, and that you're using it in the framework of your life, which is basically, of course, your life should be not, you're not caught up with that. That has not become the purpose. But it would be ridiculous if a person is going to start depriving themselves of all of these emotional gratifications, then he's going to become depressed, and he's not going to be able to be happy. He's not going to serve God properly. That does not make any sense whatsoever. That's what the Rambam says. That approach is Christian. That's evil. You must, just like the body must be in a state of health, the emotions must be in a state of health with as best as you can. I mean, no one's perfect, but it's not a mitzvah to be miserable. That's why the people that are excessively guilty are not serving God with the guilt. There's a role to play when you recognize sin and you regret and do tshuva and move on. But if you're just going to commit yourself to a life of being guilty all the time, and when you're guilty, you're miserable and you can't do anything, so how are you serving God? As though that's religious, it's good that I should feel guilty. God's happy with that. That's an absurdity. So too, is God happy that you deprived yourself of this enjoyment? But this enjoyment is beneficial to you. So that you have to have a certain strength of rationality to be rational and not to be emotional about these things. Again, getting back to the children or teenagers, another rule, when a kid comes to you with a thing and a question pertaining to their emotions and so on and so forth, before you're very tempted to give that lecture, a lot of times I think it bothers you and you feel bad about it, and you want to like explain that they shouldn't have it. It bothers you. You feel you identify and you feel like a bad parent, and then I must have this problem. You should analyze yourself first. But also, before you give that speech, what is the effect that I'm trying to achieve? Think it through. We very often we instinctively react with the right thing. We say, it was the right thing to say. It was the right idea, but you didn't achieve anything by saying it. You alienated someone. I mean, I have to learn that as a rabbi all the time, taking up a topic and discussing this, and it doesn't always get a good result. So why did I say it? Well, because it's the right thing. Yeah, I know that, but then the next thing is, at the end of the day, what did I achieve by saying it? What's the right way to go about it? Restrain yourself. Just because it's the right thing doesn't mean that you should say it. Because the person who's hearing it, what are they going to hear? Put yourself in their position. Before you have to know your child to a certain extent, try to think it through. What's my goal over here? Given that she's asking, what can I achieve over here? How can I get a good outcome? That's extremely important. People have responses, they get off a letter, this and that, because it was wrong, and they don't think to the next step. Well, what did you achieve as a result of that? They can only think of step one. Step one is, that's the correct reaction. Well, that doesn't guarantee they even have the correct reaction, but let's assume they do. Let's assume you're completely correct, and that person did the wrong thing, and they insulted, and this, that, and this is, what you're saying is correct. Yeah, but what are you gaining by expressing it? You only made matters worse. So what did you achieve? Is the objective just to vent? No. So then you have to control the emotion and decide what can I achieve now and how to go about achieving it. And that's it. That's very important in relationships, especially like marriage. Because everybody just acts out. And well, you shouldn't have done that. So it's true. But what did you gain by the way you chose to express yourself? Did you make matters... And people keep doing that over and over again because they're so fixated on their concept of the right thing. First of all, it's your concept. It's not the right thing. It's your concept of the right thing. But even you are right, even assuming that you're right, but the method you chose, you know, so you gave a lecture and you got angry and this and that, and it never ever works. It never ever works, and people keep replaying it for years. They keep replaying the same game, the same disc for years and years. No one can stop the thing because they can't get past that point. That even if you were right, but the way you chose your method of communicating it is absolutely useless. It has negative effects. So maybe there's another way to go about it. The interesting thing in life is that so many things in life, the successful technique, how very, very frequently is counterintuitive. Intuition is a good thing, you know, it's a certain kind of intuition, if it's intelligent intuition. If it's just emotional intuition in situations where you are personally very involved, you got to be careful about that. You can't just trust your intuition. Intuition is significant, but there's an intuition which is born out of a calmness, out of an understanding, businessman, he has a certain sense, and even then he wants to get more information, but that's one kind of thing. It's amazing in life that the most successful techniques are really counterintuitive. When you didn't just act out, you had the ability to realize that that's acting out. See, that's part of your self-knowledge. A person with self-knowledge knows, thinks it's in, and I know right away that's just acting out. And you know it's acting out, so you stop. You pull back the acting out card, then you look for the other card until you find the correct card, and you get over it. And when you act out and get nowhere, at the end of the day you feel miserable. Because you lost twice. First of all, you have to suffer whatever it was that the person did that you don't like, the behavior. Secondly, you acted out, and you had the indignity of futility, the whole futility of being stupid, of not acting intelligently. When you act correctly, then you feel much, much better about yourself. Because you always feel bad about yourself when you're acting on a lower level, you're not acting intelligently. You're just the fact that you restrained yourself and you thought it through and you act intelligently, and then you'll enjoy the fruits. You'll see how it works. And then you'll see that the instinctive reaction is not what I thought it was. It doesn't help me. I don't want to do it anymore. The emotion stands in the way. It's your ego. He should know better. You know, all that stuff. That's what it is. So very few people can you even talk to about this.